Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Power Lunch Speaker. Before we begin and I introduce Colleen, the people who had lunch here, there are those lovely little plants on your table. If you look on your saucer from your cup, if you have a little yellow sticky with a star, you are the Flower Power winner for your table, and you're welcome to take home your lovely plant. Enjoy. Somebody has to have a saucer with a sticker. Oh, they took the saucer. Okay, well, anyway, decide among you who gets it. Since we're running just a little bit late, instead of the 2 o'clock start, everything will start at 2:05 so that we can have a full speaker. I first heard the speaker from an MP3 player that I had gotten from a birthday party that I hadn't gone to her workshop, and I really just loved her, loved it. Then I heard her at kitchen sink, and I said, oh, my goodness, I have to ask her to speak for us. So without further ado, here's Colleen.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name's Colleen. I'm a compulsive overeater. Wow, that sounds so cool. Like, I don't think my name ever sounded that good. And by the way, God gave me a great little warning when I was driving over here, message, and God speaks to me in many different ways, but this one came in the form of a license plate frame that said, it's all about me, who the hell are you? And I went, oh, how fitting. God's like, just in case you forgot, this is where you come from. So to qualify, I'm so excited to be here. This is so much fun. I have been abstinent for 11 years, and I think February 4th will be 5 months. My top weight that I know was 311 pounds. I've been maintaining about 160 or so pound weight loss for probably about 9 years now. Yeah. Yeah, God deserves all that credit, definitely. And I do have pictures that are going around, but those of you who've heard me speak before, I have to show you my pants. These are my size 24 jeans. And the sponsor that I worked with for many years told me that I should keep them. She said, if you're ever too tired to work your program, they're waiting for you. So like the true Southern Californian, I carry them in my car. But, yeah, it's truly, truly amazing, and the fact that I'm standing here shows you that the power of the 12 steps goes beyond any understanding. There's really no reason why I should be standing here. I should be waddling off somewhere, probably on my diabetic couch, you know, pending perhaps having my foot cut off. I mean, that's where I was headed, really. That's where I was headed. Not because I had any of the signs, by the way. I didn't have high cholesterol or high sugar levels or anything like that. I did have a grandmother who was diabetic. But there was nothing screaming at me to say, you need to deal with this. The only thing that was screaming at me was my body. And the reason that I came into these rooms almost 12 years ago was that I was so uncomfortable in my skin, I couldn't ignore it being there anymore. So much of my disease was about not being present in my own body. And I used food for that, and I used to talk to myself like I was the worst person on the planet, because don't you know I earned that spot? And I did all of these things under the guise of, like, somehow this was a way of living. And it was the only one I knew. And thank God for OA, and thank God for the steps. And one thing I just have to mention, and thank you very much, Roberta, for asking me to speak. It really is an honor. The first thing I thought of when Roberta asked me to speak was I remembered that it was Sandy who spoke here last year. And because I got to get the tears out right away, I know that she's here in this room. Thank God for her, and thank God for this program. And those of you who had the privilege to know her, you know, just an amazing, amazing spirit. And that's what we get by living these 12 steps and by being in these rooms and by stepping one moment at a time, one step at a time, one action at a time into recovery, into claiming back our life. I mean, that's really what it was. I was on a very slow path of death, you know, and it started I don't remember my first compulsive bite. I mean, my family were originally from New York, so I remember the Carvel store that was down at the end of the block. Yeah. And I remember the Jimmies. Those are chocolate sprinkles, for those of you from the West. And I remember the fascination of watching them take the soft serve and roll it in the Jimmies and being like, ha, ha, ha. Like, so excited, you know. And I think I was probably like 4. But I know that life got really uncomfortable and really unsafe at a very young age. And food was there. I didn't know how to get into the liquor cabinet. You know, thankfully I didn't have access to, you know, heroin or anything like that. And I'm really grateful to the food. And I mean that not in a sarcastic way at all. Because you know what I realized is that if the food had not been there, I would have found something that would have worked. And so, you know, sugar in really high doses, and then you add fat and flour and salt and everything else, like, it works really well to take me out. So I imagine on some level we're all a little sedated right now, so that's okay. I figured that's an easy audience to talk to. I won't get too many hecklers. I did a stand-up comedy routine a couple months ago for the first time, and I was so grateful that the people there were supporting all the other new comics, because I thought, I don't think I could handle it if somebody was like, you know. I would have like felt like I needed to take care of them. Another element. I'm sure none of you feel that ever. But, you know, my eating basically just progressed as I got older. I didn't start showing it till I was about 8 or 9 years old, right around, interestingly enough, the time I hit puberty. So I'm sure all kinds of... Oh, by the way, I had to totally laugh because I got here and the first thing that I was able to go to time-wise was the sex workshop. And I thought, oh, isn't that fitting? Yes. So I'm sure that it's no mistake that it's around the time of puberty and feelings and all that stuff that my eating really took off. And my story is that I just kind of went up. I do remember, like, dieting and stuff my version of a diet was... The night before, I was, like, laying in bed going, please, 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 I'll do it. I know I'll do this. And, you know, it's like they talk about in the big book, I think it's in Bill's story, where he talks about how he has all these grandiose ideas when he's drunk. Yeah, when I was high on food, I had all these great ideas, and they were usually about how I was going to not do whatever. And that lasted probably till about lunchtime the next day. That's about as far as it went. The longest I ever did any kind of a diet of sorts was when I was a freshman in high school. I got this diet from the back of a teen magazine, and I essentially was eating probably about 800 calories a day. I'm not really sure how I managed to walk. And, you know, I lost probably about 38 pounds. I remember my goal was different than that, and my goal was to be on this specific date, and I was going to weigh the specific amount. Now, the funny thing about it is that I didn't actually take any realistic steps to get there. But I was just kind of hoping it would, like, poof, I'd wake up, and then, like, all of a sudden it would happen. Like, I didn't want to actually do any work, you know? And the funny thing about being so demoralized is all of a sudden you're a little willing to do some work, you know? Like, when there's no other way, you're like, all right, fine, you know? When you're defeated and demoralized, all of a sudden anything else is a better option. So I lost, like I said, probably about 38 pounds, and I wasn't quite at a healthy body weight, but I was almost there. And it just took a couple looks from a couple different men before I'm sure the food started to call even louder. Not that it was their fault. It was all the stories I had in my head. So it's not a case of, like, because of that, of this. This is all sort of the programming that I developed over time. You know, these stories that I made up about why things were the way they were and therefore why I needed to eat over them. My mind is a walking justification box for why I should be able to do this or get have that or whatever. None of it, or I should say very rarely any of it, is based in any kind of reality. You know, they talk about... I think it's in the AA 12 and 12, that as addicts, we are in full flight from reality. Well, that is something I'm very well practiced in, because it's full flight from reality to think that I'm going to eat the Susie Q's and the cookie dough and the pizza and not continue to weigh over 300 pounds. It's full flight from reality to think that I can somehow get through life when I'm not willing to pay bills. It's full flight from reality that, like, you know, what I'm putting in my body is causing it to get bigger. See, I had this sort of interesting disconnect where it was like I did not connect the way I was eating with the size of my body. That's how I literally would look at life from like sort of like here up, you know. And, you know, the sort of interesting irony about it is that I'm a dancer. I've been a dancer most of my life, and that didn't mean anything. You know, like I can move it around and stuff like that. But as far as being connected to it, you know, like in my mind, my body was like the worst thing on the planet. And I treated it pretty much that. I carried around like a spare tire. Actually, I probably treat spare tires better. But, you know, like I would just throw it around. And so, you know, as a dancer, I was clumsy and I trip over things and bump into things and fall and scratch. And, you know, like because I wasn't there. I was always somewhere else, you know. And that's what I've learned in these rooms, the importance of just being present. And that, you know, when I'm in the present, there's really nothing to be anxious about. There's nothing to, you know, conjure up from before. There's nothing to be looking towards. It's just the moment. And one of the things that's fascinating to me is, and, you know, my mind, when it's left with too much to do, which is not a good thing, too much open time, it likes to try to come up with interesting reasons, like why? Why do I have to be a compulsive overeater? Why this? Why that? And, you know, that's when I just got to go, honey, child, just shut up. It doesn't matter why, you know? Like, because I can know the whys until kingdom come. It's not going to do anything. You know, knowing why I ate a pizza and half a batch of cookie dough to pass out on a Friday night did not stop me from eating it. Shocker. Actually, not eating it is what stopped me from eating it. You know, like, you know, God gave me eyes to see, ears to hear, hands to touch, mouth to taste. Like, I can put the fork down. God's not going to, like, materialize and take it out of my hand. You know, that's my part. You know, I have to be willing to look at the things that I don't want to look at. And one of the most fascinating things to me is that because I clearly know better than God, at least I did for a long time, I know that God is not interested. God is just as afraid of those places inside of me that I don't want to go that I am. But that just shows you how little I know about God. Because when I finally break down enough and I'm willing to go into those places that I'm so afraid of, God's already there and he's like, sweet child, so glad you're here. Let's get to work. You know, I want to show you something. Let me put the light on this. Let's take a look at it. You know, and that's what I learned by working the steps. And, you know, they talk about in Bill's story that we have to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life. And so in living the steps, that's always been like, well, what am I doing to enlarge my spiritual life? So I've done all different kinds of things. And I have, you know, certain spiritual practices that I do. But what is fascinating to me is that wherever I go, whatever teacher I listen to, whatever thing I experience, I go, oh, yeah, I learned that in the rooms. Oh, yeah, that's in the big book. Oh, yeah, that's... We have such a gem here. Oh, my God, like such a gem. Like, I can't even tell you, like, the words of gratitude that I have for those two drunks who, like, you know, managed to stick around each other long enough to not to kill each other, you know? And, like, the fact that Roseanne just, you know, like, went to that, what, Gamblers Anonymous meeting and thought, hey, maybe this might work. I mean, like, what if she had thought, nah, oh, my God, thank God she didn't do that. You know, how many times have we thought, that won't work, you know? But, like, God intervened and went, no, 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 it's a good one. Run with this, sweetheart. You know? And she had mind enough to listen. Thank God. I would not be here. I would not be here. I might be physically on the planet still, but I would not be here. See, the interesting irony about this disease is that I think, well, I'm not, like, totally killing myself, right? Because I'm not, like, drunk down, you know, falling on Skid Row or something like that. But, you know, being, like, completely dead, vacant is just about the same, you know? Like, not being present or willing to, like, show up emotionally, same thing, You know? I mean, I literally was like a walking dead person when I came in these rooms. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I just figured I had pretty much resigned myself. Because when I came in these rooms, I was 28 years old when I came in. So at that point, I remember somewhere around the age of 20, 21, thinking, maybe it just doesn't get any better. You know, like I'm just supposed to blot out the rest of my existence. And 21, that's a really long time. And my great grandmother lived till 94. I had a long way to go. And I thought, okay, so for like 70 plus years, I'm just going to blot out my existence. But there was enough of something inside of me that went, no, it's not true. So I just kept doing the best that I could. And I did the best that I could until I realized that there was another way to do it. And you guys showed me that. You know, you said things to me like, keep coming back. And I thought, I feel like a piece of shit. And you went, keep coming back. And they're like, we're so happy you're here. And I'm like, what? You know? I mean, I remember like the third meeting I went to. Oh, no, it was the fourth meeting because, you know, I am compulsive. So, like, I went to my very first meeting and they said, try 6 meetings. So by the next day, I'd done 4. Because, you know, I'm going to do this. We're going to do this, right? So it was the fourth meeting I walked to. It was a Sunday night, and it was the Darby office in the San Fernando Valley. And they were like, hi, we're so happy you're here. And they came out and gave me hugs. And they're like, you're beautiful. And I was like, you're on crack. You know, and I still remember 30 days. And I about a week later, I got a sponsor because that's what you said to do. I'm very good at following rules. I was a school teacher for many, many years. So schedules and rules, I got it. I binged on a schedule, for God's sake, you know, like, now's the time to call the pizza guy. Well, actually, by the time then, it was, like, on the internet, I knew if, anyway, so, you get the idea. But, so you said to get a sponsor, so I got a sponsor, and I remember after about 30 days of abstinence, like, my abstinence when I first started out was 3 meals a day, and 2 snacks, and there was no specific alcoholic foods that I identified at that point or whatever, so it was just I ate 3 times a day, and they were big meals. And but I wasn't eating in between, so that was a distinction. And I think for me, that's how it had to start, because then there were moments there where God and program and all that stuff could get in, because there was a time when I wasn't chomping. And so I remember when I got my 30-day chip and I went to this meeting, I think it was the 100-pounders meeting in the Valley, and I was very excited because I remember I was at school and I was grading papers because I was such a martyr, like 6 o'clock at night. Actually, I think I only did it because before program, I could go to the store and get all my stuff and, like, sit and eat and grade. In fact, I remember that being abstinent grading. I was like, oh, this takes a long time. And somehow these, like, middle schoolers' responses to things aren't so cute, you know? I was like, really? Really? Do you know what I'm not eating? You know, like, I used to be nice, not anymore, no. No, I was one of those fat people who's, like, super, super nice. In fact, I remember, actually, after a year of abstinence, at this point, I had been off of recreational sugar for about 6 months. And again, it was like another piece where it was like, okay, now there's some space for God or in program to come in because there's something I'm not doing, whether it's not eating or not having one of my alcoholic foods. And I was at this workshop that was given, and they were talking about, like, you know, like planning out your food and, you know, looking at things. And they were talking about weighing and measuring stuff. And this girl comes up to me, and because I had written something about peanut butter, and she said something like, would you be willing to weigh or measure the peanut butter? You know, like measure a tablespoon of peanut butter. So like a really good fat girl. I said, sure. And inside I'm thinking, no, I'm not measuring no goddamn peanut butter. Like, are you crazy? What? Uh-uh. And then about a week later, all of a sudden, things began to change. But because I learned a prayer there. I learned a prayer that I began to say every day. And that was one of the, like, I was going to about 3 meetings a week. And this was, I was now on my second sponsor. The first sponsor I had, she was really awesome. And she was very caring. And she said, call me whenever you need to. So I never called her because I didn't want to bother her. And so, you know, one of the things that, so that didn't work. So after about 4 months, I'm like trying to do it on my own. And it was a speaker at another meeting who said to me, "Sweetheart, you're trying to do this by yourself. It doesn't work." And I was like, "Yeah, I know." So she literally grabbed another woman and said, "Here, work with her." And I was like, "Oh my God," you know. But again, I was like, "Okay, you know, whatever, whatever." And that woman had me call her every morning at a certain time, and there was structure. I'm somebody who needs that kind of structure and accountability. I've just sort of learned it's one of the beautiful things about me, as I've come to see it. And so that was really helpful. And you know what? There's something very powerful about somebody who's willing to be on the other end of the line to listen to you go da da da. I mean, I can't even tell you how long I went on about my roommates to this woman before she was like, "How would you feel about not having sugar?" I mean, I'm sure she was like watching me like this, you know, and it was all their fault and da 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 da, you know. And she's probably like, "Yeah, yeah," you know. But she didn't, at least not to the way that I felt. I actually thought, "Oh my God, what if we got like video calls with our sponsors?" But that would be frightening for my sponsees as well. But anyways, so. You know, she said this prayer, the woman who's leading the workshop, she said a lot of things, but she said, oh my God, I totally blanked on it. That's not funny. But it was very similar to another prayer that I had learned about the idea of, like, God, come between me and whatever is keeping me from you, you know. I mean, I learned the one about God, come between me and the food, for the food comes between me. I still remember the very moment when that worked. I was at a restaurant, I was eating the salad, and I could tell I was starting to get full. And I said the prayer, and I, like, put the fork down. I was like, woo. Like, you don't understand. I do not finish things. Like, the plate's clean, you know. I was like, wow. That's still, honestly, that's still a miracle to me. You know, I remember a few months back when I was dating this guy and went to this restaurant, and of course the serving they give you is like twice what I need, you know, and I don't like ask for a to-go box. I could have done that, but I was like, I don't want to bring the leftovers home, whatever. But I was like, how am I going to not eat that thing? Because he's not going to care. And so I remember I just prayed, and like miraculously that thing sat there on the table the whole time we were talking, and I was fully present, and I'm like, whoa. Like, I mean, I'm still blown away by, like, miracles that happen around food. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's supposed to be all not about the food. Whatever. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm a compulsive reader. Like, when something's like happen, I'm like, oh, my God, God is alive. You know? And so from that point, I realized, and it was probably about a month later, that I was sitting in a meeting. It was a women's meeting. And there was a woman who was reading from the doctor's opinion. And she read, "The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence." And I remember very clearly, it was almost like an out-of-body experience, although a little less dramatic than that. But it sounds better, doesn't it? And I was sitting in the meeting, and I just remember kind of looking at myself. And at this point, you know, I'd let go of like 25 pounds, because when you're not eating sugar all the time, that happens. But, you know, there's still a lot of other things you can eat. And I was nowhere near a healthy body weight. And when you lose 30 pounds at over 300 pounds, nobody can tell. So it's not like people are like, "Oh my God," you know. That happens when you lose 80 pounds. That always. I remember I was on the schoolyard one time, and one of the teachers goes, "You lost one of them," and I was like, "Thanks, I think." I'm like, "Should we go find them? Like, what does that mean?" You know. But anyways. I'm so glad that my sponsor said to me, "It doesn't matter what other people say about your weight." Okay, good. Thank you. Good to know. But I was sitting there and I was like, what am I doing? You know? Like, and I just very clearly, at this point I had made some connection to that I use food to protect myself. And I carried around lots of weight to protect myself. Of course, the insanity is that it never actually did that. But I believe that it did. You know, and so I literally, it was like I had this conversation with myself and I was like, this isn't doing what you think it's doing. And so at that point, I made a decision that I wanted it gone. And so I had kind of reached a crosswalk or whatever with my sponsor. And so I got another sponsor and, you know, I just really amped up my program. I had to go to like 5 to 7 meetings a week because I needed to get this through this thick skull. the stuff. Like, I remember when I first came in, I was like, why do they read those things all the time? Every meeting. Really? Yeah, because I need to hear it over and over and over again. You know, why do we introduce ourselves every time? I'm compulsive over. Because I need to remember that. You know, it talks about in chapter 3, more about alcoholism, that we're obsessed with the idea that one day we'll be able to be normal around food. And so every time I say my name and I'm a compulsive overeater and I go into a meeting and read those steps, I get reminded I'm not normal around food and I'll never be normal around food, no matter how much recovery I have. You know, and I can begrudge that as much as I want. And as much as I hate that and begrudge it, the more uncomfortable I am and the more in pain I am. Because all I'm doing is delaying working the steps and having recovery. You know, everybody's got something. At least mine has a solution. At least ours has a solution. And that's what they offer in these rooms. That's what they offer in these steps. That's what's in that big book. So when I made that decision, and you know what's interesting too, in chapter 5 on page 58, they talk about the zero step. You know, if you have decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it. And what I learned over time, that any lengths meant doing things I don't want to do. Yeah. In fact, I measure my recovery by the number of things I do that I don't want to do. And the paradoxical way that the universe works is that I live a life that I absolutely love. I don't get that, but that's okay. I don't have to understand it. Just like God. I don't have to know what God is or how God is. I just need to know that God is and I'm not it. And, you know, so when I really threw myself in, program became the most important thing without exception. And I had to learn how to fight for my right to be uncomfortable. You know, it says in step 7 in AA 12 and 12 that pain is the admission price to new life. And it talks about the process is unbelievably painful. I mean, like, if you're reading this, you're thinking, why would I want to do this? And I've learned the only reason I want to do this is because the pain I'm currently experiencing is so bad that anything else couldn't be as bad. You know, that feeling of like, oh my God, I can't not have that thing. You know, and I breathe and I call and I write and I go to a meeting and I do whatever I need to do so that I don't eat that thing. And then it passes and I go, oh, it actually works. You know, but it's sitting in that uncomfortableness that I was never willing to do. I always wanted to wait till I felt like doing it. I was about to say, Colleen, if you wait to feel like not eating a pizza, it's not going to happen. You just don't eat it. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, I couldn't really begrudge her. The woman kept over 100 pounds off for like 16 years. I was like, obviously, you know something about what you're doing. And every time I'd be like, it doesn't work, she'd be like, it doesn't? Oh, God, you want to hit her. It's like my sponsor now, she'll say things like, that's interesting. I'm like, oh. It's like her subtle way of like reminding me, that's madness in your mind. It's madness in your mind. You know, like, that's a thought. It is, isn't it? It's an insane one, but it's a thought. I've got lots of them. You want to hear more? And she stays on the phone for another 10 minutes. So when I made this decision that program came first, it meant it came before my job, it came before my friends, it came before relationships, it came before anything else. Thank you. And that's when my life turned around. And, you know, I delved into the steps, I put down the food, and I got a life. You know, when I came into these rooms, I didn't even know how unmanageable my life was. Like, you know, I was so disconnected from myself. And, you know, it was just like things just didn't work. Things just didn't work. You know, and it was like more ammunition for like, see, I just have a bad lot in life. And what I see today is that, yeah, stuff happens for me, not to me. Because everything is an opportunity to learn. See, I used to think I should know how to do this, even though, I'd never done it before, whatever it was. It didn't really matter what it was. I just should know how to do it, even though I've never done it before. And so when I'm in that place of thinking I should already know, it means I'm blocked off from learning anything. And God's always like, listen, what can we learn from this? What can you learn from this? And I'm like, okay. you know. So I don't have to make myself feel like a piece of crap about it. I don't have to be the shining star about it. I just have an opportunity to learn something. And when I approach it that way, all of a sudden life doesn't carry quite the sting that it does. And I don't have to go around, like, needing protection from everything and everyone. You know, I can actually step into life. I can actually take a breath and not be in fear all the time. I mean, I lived in constant fear and anxiety. And, you know, sitting through that and writing through it, you know, there's a reason why they call writing an indispensable tool. I'm like, oh, that means, like, it's necessary. I should pay attention to that, you know. And I do. I would be so afraid that I was going to eat something else than what I committed or whatever. And so I'd take out the pen and I would just write. And then it would pass. And I've had days. I've had days that were really crappy. And I went to a meeting. I felt a little better. And then the crap came back. And so then I'd pick up the big book and I read something. And then the crap came back. And then I'd call somebody and I'd feel a little better. And then I got to go to bed. And I woke up and it was a new day. You know? One of the things that I say every single morning when I wake up, as much as I possibly can, is to be my first conscious thought, is thank you, God, for the gift of this day, for the opportunity to be abstinent and of service to others. That is not a default for me. I'm usually like, what can I get from this? How is this going to be beneficial to me? And I still think those things, but I just don't say them out loud to anyone. Except maybe my sponsor. I'm like, well, I was kind of hoping, you know, I'd get some out of it. She goes, that's a thought. You know, and a lot of what's interesting to me about living this life of the 12 steps is that I have no idea where it's going. And for the first time in my life, I'm actually okay with that uncertainty. You know, and we get to be witnesses of life to each other in these rooms. Because you guys share about stuff that you go through, and I think, oh my God, I don't know if I could ever handle that. But you did, and you didn't eat over it. So if you did that, then maybe I can do that. And, you know, my relationship with my family all seemed very nice because my family, we grew up, it all looked really good except Colleen was fat. And so the funny thing was is that Colleen was no longer fat, but we still had this, like, but everything looks fine. You know, we don't know why she was, but now she's not, and now we're happy. Although every once in a while my mother's like, are you eating enough? And I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. All I did was eat too much. Now you're worried that I'm not eating enough, you know. But I love that woman. I love that woman. You know, when I came into these rooms, I don't think I ever said anything, repeated anything she said without a, like, slit of sarcasm in there, ever. And now I, like, say my mother, and I smile. It's not even like I'm trying. Like, just love that woman. And I love my father. That is not me. I missed seeing them at Christmas. That is not me. I didn't speak to the man for 3 years because he didn't own up on his part. And doesn't he know he should at least admit what he did? That's a thought. Keeps me in a lot of pain and misery, but it's a thought. And maybe I can let go of what he should or shouldn't do and just do what I need to do. And I can live a lot better and a lot more peacefully. I mean, I think this program is magical. I think every single step happens exactly in the order it's supposed to. And I think our life happens exactly as it's supposed to. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that I'm not privileged in any way. Because you know what? These steps are here for the taking. And it's not somebody who looks a certain way or acts a certain way or who gets it when they first come in or never has relapse or never dealt, you know. No, they're here for the taking. You just got to pick up the big book, grab somebody's hand, and get to work. Put down the food and do what needs to be done because this is about living. And for the first time in my life, I don't wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and go, ugh. I'm not saying every morning I'm like, wow, hello, beautiful. But some mornings, sure, why not? Can't hurt. you know, that contrary action, all these silly cliches, they actually, there's a reason why they're cliches. And so I would just say, do we have any newcomers in here? Any newcomers? Awesome! Woo! Any over here? No? Oh, so glad you're here. It's okay if you didn't understand anything I just said. Keep coming back. And that goes for everybody. If you liked what I said, keep coming back. If you didn't like what I said, keep coming back. So, you know, the thought I have is that I'm supposed to leave you some sort of pearl of wisdom, but that's not going to happen. So, because it's all in the big book. So yeah, I don't need to worry about giving it to you. Thank God. Whew. Now that we got that out of the way. What I can tell you is, from my experience, that, thank you. The only thing I do know is that this morning I got a breath. And so to me, that's God's way of saying today's a day, and you get today. And I can help you out with that as much as you like, or you can do as much of it on your own as you want. But I want you to know that I think you are the most precious thing. And I love every part of you, even the parts of you that you don't like. And you may encounter some things that you don't want to handle or you're not ready to handle. But I'm here. And I'll just finish up with this one story. It happened to me after a birthday party a couple of years ago. I went out to the beach after being here all day long, and I had this experience. I've had very different experiences of God, and I felt God was, like, standing behind me. And he had his arms around me, but he was breaking open my chest, and, like, it was painful because I had so much iron and ice around my heart. And I could just hear God whisper, "I know this hurts, sweetheart, but we got to open it up. We got to open it up so we can let some of the love in and let some of this other stuff out, you know?" And he's like, "I'm right behind you. I'm right behind you." And I had no idea what that meant or whatever. I was crying my eyes out and thought I was more insane than usual. But that's what this program does. It softens your heart. It opens you up. It makes you willing to just smile instead of scream. And just think, okay, just take another breath, and maybe it'll feel like the one that I got this morning, and I'll feel connected. So whatever your experience is in these rooms, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please, please keep coming back.
Thank you, Colleen, for speaking. This is great. So we're going to, it's 2:05 now, so we're going to give a little bit of a chance. There's lots of stuff going on this afternoon. There's a dinner tonight, and we have a long-timers panel that starts at 8 o'clock right in this room. So enjoy the rest of the conference.